Hey, and welcome to Media Obscura. We're a show dedicated to watching and reviewing old and obscure movies and television. I'm your host, Nick, and I'm joined today by my faithful co-host, Raekwon.
We're here.
On today's episode, we're here to talk about the 1986 movie, Rad, directed by Hal Needham. And the reason we're doing this is because, one, we needed to watch something and talk about it on camera so that we can prep for a project we're working on. Full transparency. Two, we just wanted to get off our asses about it. I'm like switching cameras as I talk.
Yeah, I look at you and this one and that one.
It's worth mentioning for everyone only listening, because this will go on our podcast feed as usual. Yes, there is a full video component. We don't know if it'll ever get released, but it is intended. We're trying to like stress test several cameras before we promptly replace them. So Rad is a movie. It came out in 1986. I think it's a movie.
It is a movie.
It was, yes. Okay, good. Thank you. We're getting word from our fact checkers.
Like, just, hold on. It's a movie.
Right. We have a room of kidnapped scientists in the Antarctic. They're mixing chemicals and they're like, Rad is in fact a movie.
Like, hold on. R-A-D. It is a movie.
Okay. Yep, we got him. Rad came out in 1986. It's a movie. It's considered a cult film by some online. And it is a BMX bike extreme sports competition underdog drama. Can I keyword stuff this anymore?
Wow, that was good. That was descriptive.
Yeah, well, that's my Amazon link. Like, the Amazon listing for this movie probably has all of those keywords there so people find it.
BMX biking competition drama.
Featuring Lori Loughlin and Talia Shire. So, yes, it's a movie about a guy named Crew, and it's a tale of him potentially throwing his future away because he's not going to take the SATs because he wants to be a professional bike racer.
Yes. And he is how he is preparing for this career as a pro BMX biker is through his paper route.
Yeah.
Very devoted paper route.
He's a paper boy who decides to become, it's not really Rocky, is it? Rocky is like this gritty 70s film about a down on his luck, like loan shark assistant. Mm-hmm. You know, he has mob ties and stuff, and he gets a chance to be the heavyweight champion of the world. This is about some kid who can do flips on a bike.
Yeah, pretty much.
And he maybe played a bit too much Paperboy on the NES as a kid. I didn't realize this, but apparently this movie has its fans. Like, I watched a lot of clips of it on YouTube. And people were like, yeah, they don't make them like they used to. BMXing used to be so cool. And I'm just like, okay, word.
That's funny because, like I was saying to you before we started recording, I wanted to know if people, BMX fans, are like super fans of this movie. Like, if you came up, you know, either, you know, BMX biking or skating or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know of Rad? Because I feel like you should, right? Like,
no, it's such an interesting thing. And I can say I wasn't like a huge BMX kid, but my friends were in middle school and into high school a little bit. And I knew a thing about BMXing, and Mike and I actually used to, on mountain bikes, we used to go off jumps and stuff like that. So I knew of the movie, but I'm also like an outlier because I'm me. And I host a podcast called Media Obscura. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm kind of tainting the results. And I will say, my exposure to this movie was purely because of that. Not because of biking, but because I'm a weird goblin. This is all a voice. This isn't what I sound. I actually have a much more goblin-like voice.
You hunch over when you do it,
too. I do. I'm kind of like, yes, would you like to watch the 1986 Hal Needham movie, Rad?
And your fingers get like that all back.
Yeah. And I'm actually holding the DVD for the movie. I'm like, yes, would you like to watch Rad?
Note that is a DVD of Trainspotting.
Yeah, I don't actually own Rad. I actually thought of buying the Blu-ray for this as a prop, and it was like $30. Yeah. So I was just like, no. Yeah, right. Although, I'll say it in a second. Let me finish the story. The reason I know Rad is because I'm a massive Rocky fan. Like, that is the movie that made me love filmmaking. That, Star Wars, and Ed Wood. And I used to watch a lot of fan videos of Rocky, like fan edits, like 2007. And one of them was, and it's still on YouTube, by the way, but like one of them was to the song from this movie, Thunder in Your Heart.
Wow.
which it feels like it should be in a Rocky movie.
It does, yeah.
So I knew about the movie from that. I never saw it. But I did have a teacher in high school who was a fan of this movie.
Really?
Yeah. He made a reference to the movie. I forget what the reference was, but he said something. And he's like, you guys wouldn't know that. It's from Rad.
Hmm.
And I remember, it was my senior year of high school, I remember being like, I got that reference. I know of Rad.
Mm.
I've read the book of Rad.
You were Captain America in that moment?
I understood that reference. Yeah. yeah. So he like, his jaw dropped because he's like, what? Because he'd been like making that joke all day. Because like, you know, you're a teacher. You only have so much material.
Yeah, right.
So he'd been making the joke and he was just like, what? Somebody got that? Like,
he was like, this kid's going places.
This kid's going places. Nick with his weird pop culture know-how.
I think it's funny that you said that you were watching, Rocky edits, like the Rocky AMVs.
Rocky fan cams.
Yeah, Rocky fan cams. And I was watching like the Naruto AMVs.
I watched those too. We're cultured men.
Naruto versus look at Sasuke. Us. Yeah, look at us. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? So that's my experience with Rad. I do like the movie. I will say as much. I will recommend it for all the wrong reasons. And the reason we picked this movie in particular before we really talk about the film is because it's getting a theatrical re-release of all things. Somebody somewhere thought that we needed to re-release Rad.
It'll probably gain its audience now. I mean, it already had that, but I think it'll get some more BMX guys.
But here's the thing, Raekwon. I looked into it. So they're re-releasing this movie because of a holiday they have dubbed Rad Day. First off, horrible name for a holiday. I see what you're doing there, but it's horrible. The first word ends on a D and the second one starts on a D. So it isn't Rad Day, it's Raday.
Raday.
Raday. Good Raday to you, sir. It sounds like, old speak. So that's problem number one. Number two, Rad Day isn't a holiday. They invented it. Literally, I Googled Rad Day and nothing came up about this so-called holiday except for the promotions for the movie.
Wow.
Which is to say like 3 YouTube videos and a Facebook video. And as if to add insult to injury, the only other thing was like Race Against Dementia. So Rad Day, Race Against Dementia
Day.
Oh
my God.
Yeah.
That's funny as hell. That's just funny.
So it's kind of sad.
Yeah, actually. A little bit.
A little depressing. Don't see this in theaters. Actually, maybe see this in theaters. I don't know. You can watch the review and make a decision, but.
Yeah, I mean, I would see it in theaters. I think if it got released in a theater near me, I would just go see it, catch a matinee to see that.
So part of why we watched it for this episode was because it's coming back to theaters on Thursday, March 21st. And I thought about going to see it because I have AMC A-List. And I'm like, well, I get 3 free movies a week. I'm already seeing The Matrix the day before it.
Nice.
And it does not accept AMC A-List. They don't allow you to get in for free with an A-List subscription. It's considered a special event that you have to pay for.
Mm.
And that blew my mind because I've literally been going to the movies once a week for the past month to see movies in IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing The Matrix and Dolby Cinema this week for free. But they drew the line at Rad.
Strange.
And I would have said that was very uncouth of them, but I feel inclined to say it's very unrad of them now. What the hell? Like, it's just a weird observation on my part. Why that movie? What about this movie makes it so special that I can't see it with my subscription?
Like, no, this is an event, a special event.
This is what Nicole Kidman sits down for. With sound that you can feel in your heart and your bones. And it's just literally the shot of them doing the bicycle boogie.
They're going to play the new Nicole Kidman trailer on Rad Day.
Maybe Nicole Kidman's going to do like a backflip on a BMX bike into her seat. You know.
Think Nicole Kidman's a better biker than Lori Loughlin?
I think so. I think she looks the part more than Lori Loughlin, who is like reasonably miscast in this movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's bad because like I look at Lori Loughlin and I think 2 things. I think Full House and I think prison. So... To the point where I made a joke to you where I was like, I swear to God, Lori Loughlin's family in this movie is going to have like a troubled past. Like her dad's going to be in jail or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be completely wrong. But anyway.
They didn't even really go into her background at all.
She's just a biker.
She's just the biker.
And not like the cool, I wear a leather jacket and I come from a troubled, like the troubled side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. No, she's just like a professional BMX racer who's there contractually, but isn't in the race.
Yeah, not competing.
She's not competing. She's just there.
I think she said that they sent her there for optics or whatever, just so that they can appear to be a full team. I mean, they have three people competing.
Yeah.
And she's just there.
I thought at the very least they would have had her qualify or try to qualify and then lose.
I mean, maybe there's some sexist stuff going on here. It's three guys.
Yes.
The best BMX racer or biker, whatever, BMX biker in the country. And then two other guys.
The twins. Yeah, they're just a pair of twins. I kept calling them Thom and Dom Crude because they vaguely look like Tom Cruise in the movie Days of Thunder.
They do actually look like they do resemble Tom Cruise though.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Just enough for it to be noticeable. And and we also have Crude, who is our main character in this, and he looks like a Rob Lowe lookalike.
Yeah, he does.
Even the main, like, I don't want to call him a villain because he's not, but the person that they're going up against, the so-called best biker, he kind of looks like William Zabka in The Karate Kid, dollar store Johnny Lawrence. Like, to the point where, and this is true, I read this in an interview, I think it was a Vulture interview. He asked Hal Needham at some point during the production of the movie, like, am I here to just be Willy Zabka from The Karate Kid? Because it's uncanny. They have the same haircut. They both have like bleach blonde hair, kind of, you know. Yeah. But anyway, let's just dive into this. So it's an 80s movie through and through, and it's the most 80s movie an 80s movie could be.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of the... okay, well, do we care about skipping around?
No, we don't have to talk about this movie in order.
All right, so the most 80s thing and the funniest part of the movie to me was the biking boogie down, whatever it's called. It's basically, you know, there's a dance. Also, okay, let's just say there's the competition coming up. It's called, what was the competition called? Hell's something?
Hell Track.
I think.
Which was the name of the movie internationally, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Better name.
Better title.
Yeah, way better. Okay, so there's a competition. Hell Track is a competition with some of the best bikers in the country, including the best one. They host a whole parade for the competition.
Yep.
Small town. The Mongoose team, which has Bart and the twins and Lori Loughlin's character, they're coming in. They're all talking shit like, oh, this is a small town.
Yeah.
But they have a dance coming up, the high school. Right.
And was it a high school dance or was it just like a welcome party? It was like both.
I thought that it was like their high school dance. That, like, it's just
that's
a
what
dance.
It was, because Crude asked that girl out to it. Yeah. Which, by the way, she didn't even need to be in the movie.
Not at all.
She was like, I think her name was Katie, and she literally exists for Crude to have a crush on in one scene and then ask out and get shot down in another.
But I thought there was just this dance that was going on there. And for whatever reason, all the competitors showed up. I'm from the Mongoose team.
Yep.
Like Bart and the twins and Lori Loughlin's character, they all showed
up. Even the management showed up. Did you notice that?
Yeah, actually. So maybe it was just like a welcome dance, but I thought it was their high school dance. But when I watched it, I was like, what are they doing there? Are they allowed to be there? And if they weren't allowed to be there, or not that they weren't allowed, but it was just their high school dance, they sure catered the hell to them. Like, they wanted to dance to a song. They was like, everybody clear out, move off the dance floor. Like, that was very 80s too. But I actually like that part.
What makes it even more 80s, but this is like scummy 80s. This isn't like the neon glitz 80s. It wasn't just like, oh, the kids are here. No. Like, the scummy businessman and his accomplice are there too. The scummy businessman being, I kid you not, what was his name? His name was like Duke Best, who's a scummy businessman. And then he has like a guy, his right-hand man, and they're there, which is weird. But then they're also spiking the drinks.
Yeah. I had to make a note of this because I thought it when I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
As goofy as this is, it still very much is about these adults and, you know, powerful adults kind of like preying on the talent of these kids.
Yeah.
And like, straight up though, I mean, the pressure from Duke Best on the number one racer Bart to just fucking win and be like the best one there and all that.
To be the best around that no one's ever going to keep down. Some would say, perhaps.
The one with the most thunder in his heart.
Yes, the one with the most thunder in his heart. The one with his heart on fire, as Rocky Balboa might slur.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, one more. The one with the eye of the tiger.
Oh, boy. Is that the last one? I feel like there'd be more, probably.
The one whose highway is on the danger zone.
The one whose highway is on the danger zone? Yeah. It's like, is your highway on the danger zone?
The one who was playing with the boys. The one who can't reach 55, you know.
That's what he should have said to him before the race.
Yeah.
Like, are you sure your highway's on the danger zone?
You're writing checks your body can't cash.
I just thought it was just fucking weird that he doesn't have to be like evil or anything. He could just be the villain because he's the boss of the rival team. But he's also just kind of like just a scumbag too, where they're drinking at the party, the kids dance, and he's like drinking at the race too. Do you remember that at the very end?
He's like the quintessential 80s villain insofar that he's clearly like a walking propaganda piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm about to spit some facts.
Okay.
Like, that's what's about to happen here. So, no, but... Wait, the 80s.
Hold on, guys. I'm about to spit some real shit right now.
Joke time is over. No, but the 80s was such a like overly capitalistic, like corporate era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying that like it's a bad thing, although it is. But it was such an overly corporate era. And in order to get away with just the egregious product placement and to make Mongoose look like a company you would want to invest in, they got to make Duke Best like the biggest douchebag imaginable. Like, he is such a unlikable bastard, and it's because they don't want you to associate Mongoose with being the bad. Mongoose isn't the bad guy here, guys.
Mm-hmm. It's him.
It's him. It's Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Duke is a fluke.
I didn't know if we were supposed to think that Bart was also a villain too, because he's only really an asshole in one scene. When he's going into the restaurant with his two girls on his hip and he whistles at Pops. So I didn't know if we were supposed to think that he was the asshole there, because it kind of seemed like the twins were more
so. I was going to say that.
Right?
And yeah.
Like, anytime twins are in a movie, especially like 80s and 90s, they're the evil ones.
I'm learning a lot about you.
Okay.
The next time you watch The Shining and the twins show up in the hallway, you're going to be like, those fucking douchebags.
They're clearly the villains here.
They're clearly. Yeah. They're The Shining.
Like, do the Leo meme. Oh,
there it is.
There you are.
Look at these pieces of shit.
There's the villains.
That's another thing. And I will continue to call them. This isn't their name. I will continue to call them Tom and Dom. Mm. Crude.
Crude.
Yeah, they do have a scene. First off, they are bigger douchebags.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when they're at the dance right before the bicycle boogie and they show up and they're like strutting onto the dance floor with women in matching jumpsuits.
Yeah.
Like, I loved it. It looked like a grayscale version of the Thriller jumpsuit. Mm. Just a little bit.
I think those were even like that might have been like BMX gear.
Yeah,
or something.
It was the BMX gear.
Because they had it on the back of the...
Yeah.
But I will say I did enjoy that. I was just looking at that the dance scene before the bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, clearly choreographed dance to whatever song that was. I thought that was like, you know, you can look at it and laugh because it's like cringe now or whatever, because it's the 80s.
I don't know, man. It might have been cringe back then, too. Yeah,
honestly. But like, also, it was like, damn, this is really how they think they're getting down right now.
Yeah.
And like, they're all cheering and shit. But like, it looked cool enough. But I just was thinking, like, damn, you got to appreciate the evolution of just dance, period. Because what they were doing was like going to the club and you're just showing out right now, but there was nothing really happening there.
This is the equivalent of like John Travolta hitting the dance floor in Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
you know. Right. Anyway, we should talk about the bicycle boogaloo, because it's the first like major set piece of this movie,
mm-hmm.
other than the opening where the film is like horribly tinted. Did you notice that
in the very beginning?
Yeah, when he's delivering the papers, like, is it me or is the sky like super red?
Oh yeah, in the very like. When he just took off to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was like super like pink and reddish. Yeah. I thought that was weird too.
So besides the fact that I think this was just a bad transfer of the movie, which almost justifies them remastering it, because the version that's playing this week on Rad Day is the 4K remaster. So besides the fact that like this is a bad transfer where everyone's skin tones are like super pink and mm-hmm. Duke Best is especially pink, I'm actually just going to oversaturate him only in every shot from this moment on. But I love him. He was the best part of this movie. We'll talk about him shortly. But it was just such a weird thing. Like, it was so tinted, and I can't tell if it's because the film negative was poorly preserved, it was a bad scan, or it was intentional, because it's supposed to be early morning and they're trying to simulate a sunrise. Because it was only the top part of the screen.
That's the thing, but it was noticeably, like, pink. Like,
yeah. It also begs the question, why not just do day for night and have it be, like, earlier in the day? Because day for night is when, in an old movie, it's, like, tinted blue. So I think it might have been that some weird attempt for, you know, day for dusk, maybe, or dawn, day for dawn.
Yeah. I mean, but we do know for sure that it's before like 7 a.m. that he's doing all this
stuff.
Yeah,
so it could have just been dark out.
Yeah. Like, so, you know.
Especially like, I don't know, whatever. I'm overthinking the 1986 masterpiece Rad by Hal Needham, who is an interesting character we should briefly talk about. So he was a stuntman. Turned director who worked with, I think it was Burt Reynolds on the Cannonball Run movies. I don't know if he worked. I don't know. I haven't seen Cannonball Run, but I know he worked with Burt Reynolds and he directed the Cannonball Run movies.
Oh, cool.
And he directed Smokey and the Bandit 2. I don't know if he directed Smokey and the Bandit 1, though. So, yeah, kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Something else you might want to learn about him. He was the inspiration for Brad Pitt's character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That is cool because, and that's a interesting bit of trivia there, because I think you may have told me, like maybe when we were just talking about movies at some point, I feel like you may have told me that that character was based on someone, or I heard that the character was based on someone at some point, but that is pretty cool that that's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I think it's kind of wild. It's such a random thing. And that isn't even the weirdest part of trivia. Tom and Dom Cruise, they actually wrote The Conjuring in 2013.
That is
isn't
cool.
That so random?
It's super random.
Yeah.
Wow.
I also have a theory. The reason I keep calling them Tom and Dom Cruise isn't just because I think they look like Tom Cruise. I believe they are imperfect doppelgangers of the real Tom Cruise that was created from his sweat. that was captured by the Church of Scientology. I believe the Scientologists stole his DNA and created two imperfect clones of him. Because they realized he was going places. I believe that Tom Cruise is not a person. I believe he's like six people. I think when you've done as many stunts as Tom has, he's been replaced. That's why his behavior is so erratic. That's why he jumped on the couch at Oprah. The clone was having a short out and they had to swap him out during the commercial break or else he was going to just melt into a puddle.
Tom and Dom Crude are, they're just attempts at getting to the perfect Tom Cruise.
Yeah. They're Mark 1 and Mark 2.
Yeah, they are.
And then, you know, the original Tom is somewhere in cold storage, just in a cryogenic tube.
With that hair and when his teeth were fucked up too.
And every time a Tom Cruise clone decomposes, finally, they have to go back and shave off a little bit of the real Tom's skin. Am I awake? Yes, but not for long, Tom. Puts chloroform over his mouth, shaves a piece of skin off. Ironically, at the end of the next Mission Impossible, it'll be the real Tom Cruise. I think so. So that's my totally real theory. I completely believe this. But no, it's just a bunch of Tom Cruise clones. that minor deviation into just complete mental illness aside. it's worth mentioning that I did enjoy this movie. I thought this movie was a lot of fun, actually. There were so many weird set pieces. And the movie's a mess. Like, I'm not saying the movie was good. But it was fun.
Yeah.
Because every time I started to get a little bored, something baffling happened. Like Lori Loughlin's character, whose name is Christian, by the way, and crew, they have like a romance that comes out of nowhere. It starts because he cuts off her mongoose truck at the parade.
Yeah.
And that's their meet cute, is that she nearly runs him over.
And she initiated the flirting. In that situation.
Yeah, he wasn't even interested at first. Yeah,
she honked her horn twice at him for him to look at her. And she's just like, you know, hey, like, you know, raising the eyebrows at him. And
can I just really quickly?
Yeah.
Some would say she was Lori locking onto her target. But at any rate, they meet there. They have this meet cute. He leaves. Which I love how the movie constantly fluctuates between painting Crew as like an upstanding citizen, but also a menace.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's helping the woman drive by the parade. Okay, cool. Good citizen.
Mm-hmm.
He makes an escape from a weird police officer that keeps following him by diving his bike onto the hood of someone's car.
Mm-hmm.
Menace to society. You know?
And they do balance that kind of well, because he seemed like a, it was kind of just like, not to sound like, you know, that guy, but it was kind of punk. Like it gave to me that he was, you know, actually holding up the rep of like skaters, BMX, you know, bikers, whatever, if you're into that culture, that I don't give a fuck, or, you know, anti-society shit. And, you know, and it wasn't even like he was a bad person. It was just like,
he's just a shit.
Yeah, he's a teenager. He did seem like a good kid also, but he's like, hey, I don't care about anything but riding this bike. That's pretty much it.
Which we haven't even touched on yet. But okay, well, let's finish with the Lori Loughlin.
Mm.
So yeah, she pursues him because she sees him doing tricks at the dance, and then they get into the bicycle boogie and they're just suddenly in love. And my favorite part of that is the fact that they go on like one date.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just riding a water slide up and down arm in arm, which is like several things. One, I don't know about you, but that feels like a little close for a first date.
I was
going to
say it's a little fast, right?
Yeah. It's
they
a
were
fast.
Like hugged up like that.
Yeah. Like they were hugging up like that and stuff, whatever. But that's so funny because they're like deeply in love afterwards. And then we get the awesome shot of them just staring into this river and Lori Loughlin chucking a rock.
Yeah, right behind them.
Which I loved. And this is exactly what I mean. Every time the movie starts to get a little dull, something batshit crazy happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, was this written by a human being? You know?
Also, with their like love story, I think a few things could have happened in this movie that we kind of touched on that would have made it hit a little bit harder when the ending happened. One of them was in the very beginning during the parade scene, Bart goes up to Lori Loughlin in the car and is trying to like talk to her or whatever. He whispers something in her ear.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, he's trying to get at Christian and it's not really working, even though he has his two girls with him. I think I was just thinking that he's trying to get Christian, like this is who he wants,
sure,
actually. But that is the only time that they've ever hinted at that being a thing.
And what's so funny is he tries to kick her off the team right after, remember?
And that's funny because after that was the dance thing. And he was like clearly jealous there. I didn't know if he was jealous because it was Crew with her or just because she's a part of their team.
Yeah.
And she's not doing this with them. They just did a whole thing and she wasn't a part of it. But yeah, I think that would have made for them getting together, Crew and Christian getting together.
Given it utility.
Yeah, it would have meant more. And then the other thing was the friends. He has a friend group, like a girl and a guy that are a couple.
Yeah.
But I mean, the friends aren't really a factor in the movie. Like they're not. And it would have meant so much more if we got to know more locals,
mm-hmm,
for it to be like, oh, this local kid is really going to compete and trying to win.
Like, what does it mean to everybody else for him to win other than, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, we get the support of the town at the end, but it didn't really make sense because like we were saying,
they fucking hated him .. until they did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like a menace to them, especially to the cop who did this whole fucking spiel.
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
But even that kind of made a little bit more sense because we know who he is. Like we saw a little bit of him and was like, okay, their run-ins where he is trying to chase them on their bikes is like, that's just their relationship. And that makes sense because we see them do that. But with everyone else, including his friends, we don't really see what it means to them or what the town means to him and vice versa.
So one thing that I thought would be worth bringing up, because we were just talking about like, or we were starting to get into how like sloppy the screenplay is.
Mm-hmm.
Hal Needham, bless his heart, nothing against the guy. He sounds like a badass.
Yeah.
There's a story from the lead actor in this movie, the guy who played Crew, whose name escapes me. There's a story that he told in an interview where he was like, oh yeah, Hal was just like wasted. Like, apparently Hal Needham would like stay up until like 4 a.m. drinking at night and then do a full day of shooting the next day, probably hungover, I'd assume. And while he was like watching the dailies, so the rushes of like, hey, this is what we shot today, let's review the footage, he would like have an open bar present. So he very much might have looked at making this movie. We can't ask him. He died about 10 years ago. But he might have looked at this as just like an extended party as opposed to a movie. Now, Talia Shire does say otherwise. She says otherwise. She says he was a consummate professional, that he wanted them to have fun. But like, it is also worth mentioning that Talia Shire, her and her husband's company, Talia Film, were the production company for this movie. So there might be a bit of bias.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just such an interesting thing. And yeah, I learned that also, that Talia Shire and her husband had a production company. I also learned that Talia Shire is Jason Schwartzman's mom.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. And I know he's always been on the, you know how all the fucking Nepo baby stuff has come out recently.
Yeah.
I have heard his name mentioned in that, but I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. He That's is. Cool. And I kind of see it now. That's the fun. I love Jason Schwartzman. I think he's really talented, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah, me too.
His song on Coconut Records, oh my God, was it Nighttimin', I think? He has a song from like 2010, maybe. Mm. It's really good. But yeah, so this movie feels like a party, and that might explain why it was the way it was, why the character of Katie is there when you could like easily omit her. You could have literally just had crew show up at the party.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm biased because like I've done a lot of writing in the past year. Like I wrote a fucking book. I wrote a second book. Like, you know, plug, go read Guppy Falls. It's on Kindle Unlimited. You can read it for free. Coming of age, friends to lover, romantic comedy. But like when you're writing a story, stuff like the Katie thing, if it only exists to show you that he knows how to bike, and there are other scenes of him biking prior to it, you're good.
Yeah.
Cut it. Yeah. Just cut it out. No, I think it was Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. I was watching something they did where they were talking about Francis Ha, I want to say. And they said, like, if a scene only does one thing, either make it do a second thing or cut it.
It's a good tip.
Yeah. And like, what does this scene really do for us? It establishes that like crew can bike. Okay, we already knew that, so that's redundant.
Yeah.
And it establishes that crew is going to the dance. Which, yeah, I guess, but like if the movie cuts to them at the dance, we can infer the crew is going to be there as the main character.
I also thought maybe it was supposed to further make us think or that he was a loser. I can't tell if him and his friends are supposed to be like the outcasts or not.
That was my other thing. I thought that like, I don't think they wanted crew to be a loser because he has friends.
Yeah.
If they wanted him to be a loser or an outcast, they wouldn't have given him friends. Mm-hmm. I very much think his friends are there because they want to show that like, yeah, look at how close these people are. They're BMXers and they're friends and go buy a mongoose. Do it now. Pulls a clock out.
I just wasn't sure because, again, we didn't see too much of the friends. Yeah. But I thought maybe that also was why they showed it. But I still didn't think it was necessary for that to be in there. But I kind of got that impression, especially just only the beginning, because it's like you can have every like high school movie where there's the loser kid or whatever. Yeah. They usually have a friends, like
a
two
friend.
Yeah. A please. Friend or maybe two.
Yeah.
And he has two, but they are a couple. So it's like package deal. But like with him getting shot down for the dance, and then when they do the biking thing, the guy, the DJ or whatever is like, who's that? Like, you know, and then he just takes off right after he gets all this attention from people or whatever, like from the dance. So I was thinking like, maybe he's supposed to be like some outcast kind of kid.
He's clearly like, I don't know. I see so many like facets in the screenplay that kind of make me go like, oh, this was more dramatic. And then somebody changed it because like he has a dead dad.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem that socially well adjusted. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that because like BMX kids aren't socially well adjusted. I'm just saying like he doesn't seem like a well adjusted guy.
Mm-hmm.
But besides the fact that his dead dad gets like one mention, it's just a throwaway line from Talia Shire.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like the kids were like his friends were just there to show like he has friends. Because BMXers have friends. Mm-hmm. Also, I love that his friends, they just are dating randomly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's literally done just with like throwaway dialogue. Like, and it's like, okay, what's this telling me?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think like an executive or a suit from Mongoose came into the office this movie was written in one day and went, you have to strongly imply that Mongoose or BMXers fuck.
You must.
It is a moral imperative that you show that these teenagers fuck.
I kind of got the impression that he was also supposed to be like more like lower middle class, like yeah. his family didn't have a ton of money or whatever, based on his wardrobe too.
Yeah,
like
wardrobe in the house.
Yeah, single mom. So I didn't, that was also contributing to my thinking of like, okay, is he supposed to be like not the most popular guy in school, you know?
Yeah.
And because he did wear some kind of ratty clothes.
He reminded me of like Molly Ringwald in Pretty in Pink ever so slightly. Because like in that movie, it's explicitly written that like she doesn't come from like a very affluent family. But that's the drama of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's this like lower middle class, like whatever, financially struggling
mm-hmm.
family. And she is dating like a rich kid. And that's the story. And then like, yeah, Crew just starts dating Lori Loughlin and nothing ever comes. There's no drama in their relationship. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Usually in these movies, there's always like a scene in the second act
mm-hmm.
where they have a misunderstanding. They break up, a sad montage. Doesn't happen in this movie.
Yeah,
no, BMX good. Executives were like, no.
No, they're peachy.
They're peachy.
I thought maybe, do you remember? I think that Bart sent his two girlfriends to like, you know,
corrupt him. Yeah.
As when he qualified, the two girls are out there and they're like, hey, what are you doing tonight? We got something really delicious in mind, which is really what they say.
Yeah, but like, okay. What good would corrupting Crew have done?
Further incentivize him to throw the race. He's like, hey, what's up, Nick, if you throw the race kind of thing, you know? I mean, that's pretty much
that was the dialogue, but yeah, like right. That was the implicit dialogue, you think?
Yeah, that was the
I didn't get that personally. I just was like, oh, okay, they're trying to seduce him. I know that much. I'm not that mm-hmm. I'm not that tone deaf, right? I'm not Carl and Jimmy Neutron, like, why'd you give me this dollar? But like, I just didn't get, okay, like, yeah, they seduced him.
Mm-hmm.
What's stopping him from like
racing anyway?
Like, yeah, yeah, like
competing actually, anyway.
You cheat. You're racing anyway. Yeah. Yeah, right. Fuck you. Just fucking goes.
How, yo, that would have been, we're talking about a crew being super punk rock. What if he just got with those girls anyways? Like, yeah, I think I'm going to try to get first place anyway, yeah. Guys.
He's laying in bed with them. He has his arms over his head. He's like, I'm going to race anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's been real, guys.
It's been good. Thanks for the lay and the Lay's potato chips. Throws the bag of chips as he walks away.
Thanks for the top. I'm going to go beat your boy in this race.
I'm going to go run over Brad's legs. What's his name? Brad or Chad?
It's Bart. Is it?
Crew's a douchebag in this scenario, so he wouldn't know the guy's name anyway.
Right.
Besides, he even does that with Bob earlier. There's like the line cook or whatever, Bob. Mm-hmm. He gets his name wrong. He's like Barf.
Yeah.
He's so, like,
or Blob. Right?
Blob, yeah. Blob. Yeah, there you go. He gets Bart's name wrong. He's just like, yeah, I'm going to run over both of his legs. No, don't do it. Yeah, I'm going to.
Oh, by the way, we talked about this a little bit before. The cook, I almost called him Blob too.
Bob. He's a human being.
Yeah, he's just a guy. He's a guy.
Show some respect.
I just thought it was funny seeing him in the movie because he was just like the guy that had a couple of good one-liners and, you know,
yeah.
He was just the comedic relief in the movie, even though the movie is funny already. But this just, his role reminded me of today, probably even back then. That's just the comedian. That's the stand-up comic that's yeah. like on the rise at the time.
That's just Melissa McCarthy showing up in a movie. Like, sure.
Yeah.
Or Kevin Hart or whomever.
Yeah, early stages, you know, as they're starting to blow up and they get like yeah. their first fucking movie, that's like the role that you want. Just like something easy, a couple of days probably of shooting is like you get to say something funny.
You get two or three funny lines, it mm-hmm. goes on your reel and you move on.
Yep.
Yeah, another example of like a comedian, a great example of it would be like Jim Carrey is in the Francis Ford Coppola movie, Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh,
he's
yeah?
just in it. Like it's the 80s, Nicolas Cage is the love interest in that movie and... Mm-hmm. Jim Carrey is like his buddy.
You know what? It's exactly like Jackie Brown, Chris Tucker and Jackie Brown.
There you go. That's another one.
Yeah. We were just talking about that movie. I just rewatched it recently, but it's literally that where it's like, hey, another Leo meme.
Hey,
like,
look at this.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's him. He's like, oh, he's
so
really, he's really blowing up. It's like, and he has like a few funny lines and they fucking killed him off early. Or yeah. like he has a few funny lines throughout. You may see him like three times, regardless of when he is out of that character is out of the movie. They funny, get like 3 to 4 lines.
Funny you mention that because this movie is a great example of this. So besides the fact that like it's also, look, actors got to work. They got to start somewhere, mm-hmm. right? You don't just come out the gate with the mask. Yeah. But this movie over here, Return to Horror High, is a kind of like a B-movie schlocky horror flick. Mm-hmm. It has one of the girls from the Brady Bunch. It has Marcia from the Brady Bunch in it.
Oh, cool.
And this was the first movie George Clooney was ever in, which is why he's top billed on the DVD release. He plays a guy who dies like super early in the movie.
Cool.
So yeah, really funny. Literally the perfect example is right behind mm-hmm. me. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. And you know what? All of the players in this movie put in decent performances. Like
yeah.
Lori Loughlin, she's a bit miscast, I think.
Yeah.
I think she's a bit too girl next door to be like the cool, slightly older, I'd assume, BMX racer. I imagine she's supposed to be like the girl in Top Gun who's like the older teacher who's gonna like show the main character how to get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And she is that in the story because she does teach crew how to like successfully do a backflip mm-hmm. and stuff, but nothing ever comes of it. But everyone else was well cast, except for Talia Shire.
Yeah.
She was just miscast in this movie.
She's a bit too big for the movie.
Yeah, like show some respect. You were in The Godfather and Rocky.
Yeah.
but once you get over once you accept the fact that like, oh no, it's her production company, her and her husband's production company. Yeah, you kind of understand what she's doing here, but you can tell she does not care.
Yeah. And she's such a talented actress that it's weird to say that she wasn't like, she doesn't have to do much in the movie.
The material didn't,
yeah,
like wasn't becoming of her. And what's weird about that is she is just playing Diet Adrian. Like she's Diet Adrian from Rocky, because what does Adrian do in every Rocky movie? I don't want you to fight, Rock. You can't do this. You're throwing away your future, Rocky. What does Talia Shire do? Crew, I don't want you to run this race. You need to go take the SATs and go to college. It's the same material, but it's done so much worse that it's like genuinely boring.
Yeah, it's boring, but it also isn't like, I just didn't buy that she felt that strongly about him going to college too. because okay, this is 1986.
Yeah, college still means something,
and it's not as expensive, but he was competing and if I am a parent, single parent, by the way, I would definitely feel very strongly about you going to college.
Yeah.
But you also, the kid is extremely good. There's no way she doesn't know. He's really talented at biking and stuff. There's a competition in our town, this huge fucking competition, that one of the premier brands for BMX racing and biking, whatever. And he's good enough. If he qualifies, he could win 10 grand. And if he wins the whole fucking thing, he can win $100,000.
And a Corvette. Which he could promptly sell. Probably to Prince, because it was red.
So it's like, this seems like a once in a lifetime opportunity. And that was his argument of why he should do it. So I was just thinking like, it doesn't really make sense. And that's just like problems with the script, I guess. It doesn't really make sense for his mom to be against it.
And this is no knock on Talia Shire.
Yeah, I mean, she's super talented.
I think it's literally just like she didn't want to be in this movie, but her production company needed her to be.
Yeah.
Because they saw the writing on the wall, presumably.
Yeah. It was the script, because like, why would she even be opposed to him competing?
Well, I get why she would be opposed, because like, I was team, no, just take the fucking SATs.
Mm-hmm.
But like, then I was also like, because we're looking at it like it's a movie too much. If we're looking at it like she's a real person, it's pretty reasonable to be like, look, there are people from across the country who do this for a living. You know, maybe take the SATs. I know this is a once in a lifetime opportunity, but like, consider taking the SATs. I would have gotten it. But because we're watching a movie that's from the 80s, no less, I'm kind of like, he's going to get in.
Yeah.
Come on. There's no movie if he doesn't get in. Mm-hmm. Which that, I want to see that cut of Rad. You know the scene during the qualifying race where he just fucking eats shit and just like flips off his bike? Mm-hmm. I want a version of the movie where he just like flips and then it pauses, Thunder in Your Heart, which played on a loop during this qualifying race. It's the theme for the movie. It restarts again. Like he flips over and the song fades out. And then you just hear dun 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 down. You know, the whole song starts and it freeze frames there and the credits roll. But no, like because it isn't that, because it's an 80s feel good teen movie, you're kind of like, okay, yeah, you obviously are on team crew. Mm-hmm. You're on crew's crew, if you will. Why wasn't that the name of it? They made Rad Racing the name of his crew, but his name is literally Crew.
Also, you know, that speaks, that's a part of the movie that gets us to the final competition to help.
Yeah, just the races in general.
The races, the racist. The funny thing about racists.
Funny thing about racists.
Start getting to fucking.
Let's talk about this.
The funny thing about racists. but it was funny watching that because I respect that this is a BMX movie and they straight up filmed the race, like every lap, like you see every lap and the song, the theme song, Thunder in Your Heart, just starts over again and again. It's like, all right, after like the second time, I'm like, okay, man, like something's got to happen now.
Counterpoint.
Okay.
You have horrible taste in music because Thunder in Your Heart is a classic.
It's a good song.
Good Fuck enough. You. Get out of my house. No, no, no. He's leaving. No, Thunder in Your Heart is a banger. Fuck you. I genuinely love that song. This is, again, I only knew this movie from that song for like 10 years. No, for like almost 15, 20 years.
Damn.
That's the song I knew this movie from, somewhere between that. So, fuck you. No, but like Thunder in Your Heart's great, but it is really funny because every time the lap starts during the qualifying race, the song restarts. The song, it's a 3-minute pop rock song, you know, but the race is like 10 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So they had to flex it a little bit.
They could have just like, the race didn't have to be that long.
Could have been a montage.
It could have been a montage, and they didn't use any ADR like for the race. Like,
yeah, there was no sound effects.
It was just.
I'm so happy you said that because I forgot to say it. Yeah, there were like little crowd things.
If you
and the
fell
bikes,
or something, you could hear the bike.
But it was so unexciting. Mm-hmm. It was fun to watch because of the music, but it was unexciting because there weren't any sound effects. You compare to like a Rocky movie where Rocky's like lifting and stuff in the montage.
You can hear the weights.
You can hear the weights. You can hear him grunting, punches. You hear the impact. Top Gun. You hear jets. Like it's exciting. It's not just Highway to the Danger Zone playing over footage of jets. It's you hear these planes' engines and you hear the air being cut through and banter from person to person. There should have been like shit talking. Mm-hmm. You know, they should have been talking shit to each other during the qualifying race, but it doesn't happen. And now I would really like to re-edit the race from Rad to have jet sounds.
it seemed like, because we did talk about how all the audio from that was dubbed in was bad, like super loud.
To be fair, it was the 80s.
It's the 80s. Like, I get it.
You know, ADR isn't what it is now, but like. And for example, like The Karate Kid has really bad ADR, it arguably worse ADR than this movie, but it is distracting.
Yeah, it's just a little jarring at times, but that it would have made sense during the race and you could even like, you know, give it a pass during the race.
They're wearing helmets.
Yeah. So like, it's like, you know, you got to be able to hear the shit talking and like just even like little things. It'd be funny if like when someone fell into the creek, you're like, oh, he's like, see you later, slowpoke or whatever the fuck, or like or someone falling. And then a lot of times they fell and got back up on their bikes.
One moment that could have really benefited from this. They did ADR like the announcer explaining it. Mm-hmm. But it's at the end of the movie when Bart sabotages Tom and Dom Croods.
Yep.
Because they're told by Duke Best to basically take Crew out of the race, take him out, sweep the leg, so to speak. So that happens. And we're just kind of told like by the announcer that like, oh, it appears that Bart has taken out his own teammates and he stops and he's waiting for Crew to catch up to him because he wants a fair race. Mm-hmm. that's cool. They should have said something. They should have had an exchange. Like, why'd you do that? I want to beat you for real. Like, mm-hmm. make him a character, you know?
And they didn't, there was nothing. I fully thought, like, watching that part, that was like, okay, that's cool. That he was going to say something.
Yeah.
Because he stopped and he's like waving, he's like, him waving on. Him like, come over. On. Or even like a simple come on or something would have been like, it would have made sense. But that was it.
Just it would have at least like hinted that he had grown as a character.
Yeah.
Whereas he just has a change of heart because like he just has a change of heart, mm-hmm. you know? But look, we make it sound like those scenes weren't fun to watch. I thought they were really fun and exciting to watch because I think BMXing is a fun thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
People doing cool ass tricks on a bike is a great idea for a teen movie because unlike a time machine that's a DeLorean or a jet flown by Tom Cruise and company, it's something that kids can fucking do.
Yeah.
So like you walk out of seeing a showing of Rad and yeah, you might actually buy a BMX bike and learn how to do some of this shit.
I did think it was cool though when he won the race. Spoiler alert, he won first prize.
What?
What?
Wild.
He like flipped his bike and like he crossed the finish line backwards.
Yeah.
Like that was fucking cool.
He put some shine on it.
Yeah, he did. Because he had a pretty big gap, big enough on a bike.
Yeah.
A gap to get up there, and when he flipped around, I was like, oh, that was awesome.
He was the only one doing tricks during the race, too. That's the funny part.
Yeah.
Like, even during the qualifying race, he was the only one that was, like, using the shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no drama because we're like, well, yeah, of course he's going to fucking qualify. Like, everyone is biking on dirt, and he had the forethought to jump off the track and use the sidewalk at one point. So there is one thing I really want to talk about before we stop.
Okay.
Duke Best. I mentioned that he was my favorite character earlier, and I do have to bring it up because he is just so freaking funny in it. He is funny. Giving the performance of a lifetime. I don't know what his deal is, but he overacts every scene in this movie. Even like a scene where he's just like sitting.
Standing.
Someone else is talking and he's just there.
Mm-hmm.
He is like overacting, just standing there.
Yeah.
And I loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment that I sent you. I literally screen recorded it and sent it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Where after Crew qualifies for the race, he's talking to his henchman and he's like, seriously, who does that kid represent? We got to get him.
Yeah.
And his like henchman is like, I haven't had the chance to yet, boss.
Mm-hmm.
He flips out. He like fucking yells at him. And then he just very calmly is like eating out of a bag of popcorn. Mm-hmm. And it's the funniest juxtaposition ever because it's just like 0 to 100,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then back to zero.
Yeah,
maybe even negative numbers because he eats it like he isn't even acting. He's eating it like someone has called cut,
mm-hmm.
but he's just going at it. And then he just like he has another line afterwards, or maybe he forgot the line and he was like stalling for time.
Maybe,
you know. Oh, my God.
I thought that part was funny, too, before you had sent it, because he's like the overacting. It kind of made sense and it worked. That's why I made a note of it, because I was like,
yeah, it wasn't,
he's overacting, but it's good.
It like, wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, OK, this isn't good acting necessarily, mm-hmm. but he's acting. He's doing the job.
Yeah, he's making choices. Know? Like
that's a good choices. Way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's making choices. And even when they're the wrong choice, he does it with like so much fucking conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so over the top, like. We were saying he's such an over-the-top villain that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He just goes at it.
I thought that scene that you mentioned was funny, too, because when he says, oh, I haven't got the chance, or I don't know, he's like, what do you mean you don't know? It's your job to know. Like, he's, like, talking through his teeth,
But it works. He's a cartoon character. Like, the second Pete turns, or not Pete, the second Crew turns him down, he starts changing the rules for qualifying for the race and shit, and you're just like, this is a cartoon. This is a Saturday morning cartoon, and I love it. It's so ridiculous and silly. Mm-hmm. And he literally just needed, like, a comically large mustache. And he would have been like, oh, I'm so sorry. It appears you haven't qualified. Your company must have $50,000. Also, I love this movie, which came out during the era of Ronald Reagan and is building these companies up, is technically kind of socialist because Crew gets in because everyone in town pitches in money to form a company as a team to let him in. And that's like vaguely socialist.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of like, all right. All right. Okay. All right, Talia Shire. That's why you made this.
I see you.
I get it. You didn't agree with the choices made in Rocky IV, comrade.
Comrade.
Cumberland Shire reporting for business. Oh my God, Talia, do you have laryngitis or something? What happened to your voice? Knit.
Yeah. This movie, though, like after they get the sponsorship or after they get to 27,000, it just makes me think like this could be, it would be a very worthy sequel. I would see the sequel.
You think this should have gotten a sequel?
If Rad Racing became a real thing because it's a real sponsorship now, and now he's got also got Bart in there.
Okay.
I would definitely be down to see a sequel where there is like, you know, years later, like maybe like in the 90s or something, where they're like, Rad Racing is totally a company now. We're like one of the best brands. And then we're competing against Mongoose again. We're facing the twins. They're the guys now.
I could see this. They could still do it. They could make like a TV show.
Yeah.
Could go on like YouTube Premium maybe to start. Mm. You know, if it doesn't do well, they could get bought by Netflix at some point. But could be that, and could be like budget Johnny Lawrence. What was his name? Bart? Could be Bart. Yeah. 40 years later, he's washed up. Turns out his career ended. He never actually got to join Rad Racing due to some contract stipend or something. So his life is shit. Mm. He's a drunk. He's an alcoholic. He decides to revive his racing career after a kid next door is getting bullied in school. Mm. And then crew owns a car dealership.
Oh.
And a rivalry breaks out. It's just Cobra Kai.
I'm pitching Cobra Kai. Yeah. I've heard this one before.
This movie is already just the Karate Kid. Yeah, they just swapped karate out for bikes. Mm-hmm. So
if they did go with a TV show, then it would be that, like, or like, I mean, yeah, it would just be that. Because I was going to say, maybe they would just
join forces. These guys are like 50 or 60 by now.
They're 65.
They're 65 now. There you go.
Bart's 65.
There you go. So like, what do they do? They make a legacy sequel. Mm. But here's the thing. Maybe that's why this movie's coming back to theaters. They're testing the waters, man. Yeah. They saw what Karate Kid did. It came back.
It would have potential to be cool, but they'd have to go in a different direction, I think.
No, but it wouldn't get made because like, is Rad a big enough IP? Like, I'm surprised that Rad got remastered a couple of years ago and that it has a 4K scan. Mm. I'm shocked by that because like, cult movie or not, is this movie big enough? My thing is, I'm ultimately happy that this got a remaster. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the movie. I recommend the movie. If you want something silly and over the top, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't need a sequel. Just let it be an artifact from the 80s. It's best served as an artifact from the 80s. And the only thing a sequel or a reboot or whatever people are going to inevitably try to do with anything ever, like it'll completely miss the point. It'll just be an 80s nostalgia piece. But the original movie is already that.
Yeah.
So don't.
Yeah.
That said, I was proved woefully wrong in the past. I thought Cobra Kai was going to be one of the worst things ever.
Yeah.
And Cobra Kai can be hot garbage at points. Mm. Anytime it's like a teen-centric storyline, I tune out and I check my phone. Mm-hmm. But I also unironically love that show. I was subscribing to YouTube Premium to watch it back in the day. So
I do remember that about before Cobra Kai came out, because of course we like had talked about it and sent the trailer to each other and stuff. You being like, oh, here we go. Like, you know, it was reboot city at that point too. Yeah. Like it still is now. Like everything gets fucking rebooted. But
Baywatch got a reboot the same year Cobra Kai came out, I think.
For the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
I think it was the same year. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully the full video component actually goes to air. Yeah. If not, I will have a lot of fun trying to edit out any references to it. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed, The Media Obscura, available on every podcast player. We're also available, obviously, on YouTube in some capacity. So, Raekwon, you and I are going to be doing a show really soon that we may as well just announce now.
Okay.
It's called Why Bother Watching, and it's basically going to be media obscura for famous seminal movies that one of us has never seen before, at least. Mm-hmm. Or if we've seen it, it was so long ago that like realistically we don't remember anything about it, or we just saw it recently. For example, I saw Jurassic Park for the first time a few weeks ago.
Crazy.
Yeah. And we're going to be doing Why Bother Watching, where we sit down and we talk about these seminal movies that everyone knows. And we're going to talk about, hey, is it still worth your time? Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, you have that to look forward to in the future. We're also going to do Media Obscura more.
Yep.
Just no schedule, whenever, whenever the muse strikes us. So, yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. So, yeah. Bye.
Bye.